Welcome. I'd like to invite you to join us for a new podcast, Tales from the Pennybloods, Stories of Victorian Britain. In these audio plays, we'll bring to life short stories from popular 19th century magazines. These will be tales of mystery and romance, of crime and the supernatural, with a few laughs tossed in along the way. People at the time called these Pennybloods because they were affordable and made for exciting reading. Back in the day, these stories delighted generations of readers, and we hope you will enjoy them as well. To subscribe, please visit www.talesfromthepennybloods.org.
Tales from the Pennybloods, Stories of Victorian Britain. Adapted for audio by Arnold Schmidt. Directed by Julia Warren, with J. Michael Baran, Jonathan Brandt, Tony Deaver, and Pam Palsat. The Ghost Bride.
England, England, sweet village of Rostern, one of the loveliest spots in Cheshire, placed on the banks of a small lake, Rostern Mere. Thy fertile undulating plains, thy clustered trees, thy time-tended church and cemetery where the most honored and beloved dead lie. The village's few dwellings are mostly rustic habitations, occupied by the cultivators of its rich meadows and pastures. One house stands out among the others, however, that of Mr. Bartholomew Spencer. It is a fine autumn evening when two lovers meet near a snug, whitewashed cottage that stands on the bank of the river. The year is sinking towards its end. The leaves cover the ground, and a reddish-brown hue has usurped the place of the livelier green on the trees. It is a lovely evening, the moon rising, the very night for love and love's votaries. The lovers' conversation, though wonderfully interesting to themselves, might be less engaging to others. I'll tell no secrets. For love's conversations, like Cinderella's slipper, are essentially too exclusive and fit for nobody, except for those for whom they are made. A few words may suffice to provide an idea of their concerns.
And did you miss me when you were away at school, Mary?
What a question for a gentleman to ask a lady. It's me should be asking you.
You know I missed you. I love you, Mary, with all my heart, strong and true.
I know you do, Walter, as I love you.
But I fear your father's dead set against me.
How can he be, if only he could see you as I see you?
If only, but that's not to be. His spectacles are too thick. He's a proud man, Mary. I believe he's got his heart set on a rich man for your husband. As he says himself, he'd rarely spend 2 pence where a penny would do.
Or a penny where a halfpenny would.
Aye.
Still, I believe he wants me to be happy, though he does encourage other suitors, men with more wealth.
And I believe that he feels, given his property, you should marry above your station. And I, alas, fall far below it.
You must convince him.
I'll talk with him on the morrow and do my best. But we must be prepared for his refusal.
Refusal? But then what?
Why then, heaven or the devil, help us.
I've prepared everything so that we're ready for the autumn market.
Let me see those papers. I've got my spectacles around here somewhere.
If I might, sir.
Now, where can they be?
I say, sir.
Blast it. They're always in the way except when I require them.
Pardon me, sir, but if you'll check just behind your ears.
Oh, yes. There they are. Right on top of my head. The last place to look.
That's always the case, sir. Now, about the auction.
The horses?
I expect we'll be able to sell the mare and purchase another stallion when the time comes.
Excellent, Charles. And what about... Come in.
Sorry to disturb you, sir.
Yes, Dora.
I know how busy you must be, what with all your business affairs and meeting with the caretaker and such.
Yes, quite busy.
And preparing for the auction at the fair.
As I said, Dora, we're quite busy.
So far be it from me to interrupt unless it was absolutely necessary.
So what is it, Dora?
Excuse me?
What is it? What is it that's absolutely necessary?
Oh, I beg your pardon, sir?
Why have you interrupted us here?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I almost forgot. There's a gentleman to see you, sir.
And who might be calling in the middle of a business day?
Mr. Walter Markham, sir.
Of course. A man with no business but to interrupt my business. You may send him in.
I'll leave you two alone.
Thank you, Charles. We'll continue our arrangements later. This won't take long.
Good day to you, Mr. Spencer. I'm sorry to interrupt your business.
Well, that's always the case with those who have nothing but free time on their hands.
I wouldn't know, sir. I was up at times taking care of my poultry and cows. Then my man and I worked getting the fields ready for harvest. Always a lot to do on a small farm.
Aye, a small farm.
I believe that earning a good living from a small farm takes more labor and ingenuity than profiting from a large holding.
You do you?
Yes, I do, sir. But I've not come to talk with you about farming.
I thought not. And what did you come to talk with me about?
About your daughter, sir. I love Mary, and she loves me. I ask your permission to make her my bride.
I'll be honest with you, Mr. Markham. I know no evil about you. I've never heard any ill reports or gossip. You don't drink or gamble. You work hard and pay your bills promptly. People call you a man of imagination.
I like to think so.
All that is to your credit and stands in your favor.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Then may I expect...
Hold on there, young man. Expect nothing. I'm not finished. On the other hand, though I am not a miserly man, I am not without a sense of my worldly treasures, chief among them being my only daughter.
On that, Mr. Spencer, I can say we most assuredly agree.
I know you care for Mary. I take you for a sincere man, Walter. Still, all my life I have devoted a substantial portion of my monies to fitting Mary to marry in such a way that she fill some superior station. Her mother and I both desire it. She'll have a sizable dowry.
I don't care about her dowry, sir. I'll take her as she is and support us by my land and labors.
I expect you would. But that's not the kind of life I've imagined for her. I want her to have things, live a life of ease, free from worry.
But surely, sir, your daughter's happiness matters most to us all.
It does indeed, sir. That's why I was determined to give her the advantages of the Ladies' Seminary, for which she's just returned.
From there, I agree she gained many accomplishments. She draws beautifully, sings like an angel, plays piano, and speaks French.
Well, not everything she learned at that hotbed of improvement was for the better. In addition to the talents you mentioned, she also brought with her, as usual from such places, an inordinate amount of sentimental poppycock. Those books.
Yes, she does love to read, which I think does her little
harm. There I disagree. Her imagination and emotions have been cultivated by the perusal of divers, half-bound volumes and marble covers.
Ah yes, leather-bound novels, both gothic and sentimental, adorned with such beautiful marble-patterned papers on their covers. She has a fancy for them, I know.
Exactly. Books from which Sir Anthony Absolute pronounces so detrimental to all rule and authority.
Like the authority of a father?
Certainly. Obedience to paternal authority is essential to maintain order in society.
But Mary would never disobey you. I know she'll never wed without your permission.
Of that, I'm grateful. But novels undermine that order, especially when read by a woman at a formative age.
Still, Sir Absolute from Mr. Sheridan's play is very funny.
You misunderstand me, sir. Behavior like that may be funny on the theater stage, but not in my house. By my daughter.
Then do I understand you to forbid my asking Mary's hand in marriage?
I do, young man. As I said, I know nothing against you, personally, except the modesty of your means. In time, if you prosper, we may talk again.
I hope we have a chance to do so. In time. Good afternoon, sir.
So do I. Good afternoon. A good man, true, but there are other men in the county whose greater wealth makes them more worthy of my daughter.
Ancient, prosperous, respectable. Spencer Manor rises high above its neighbors, with its dark wooden beams, solid stone walls, and tall chimneys. The manor even rises above the trees that surround it and presents an impressive sight to visitors who approach the estate from its well-maintained road. As Bartholomew Spencer observed, it isn't just Walter Markham who approaches the estate by that road. In fact, other men approach, other men who seek Mary's hand in matrimony.
Oh, what delightful weather.
Good afternoon, Miss Spencer.
Oh, Mr. Pitt, you surprised me.
I trust I'm not disturbing you.
Not at all. Are you enjoying our lovely weather?
I am. I wanted to say that I've brought you some flowers.
Thank you, I'm sure.
They're very pretty.
Yes, I can see that.
Like you. You are very pretty too.
How kind of you to say so, Mr. Pitt.
I know.
But really, you mustn't pay compliments of that kind.
When I tell my horse she looks pretty, she rewards me with a nod of her head and a whinny. And when I say the same to my cat, she purrs as I pet her kittens.
That's very nice, Mr. Pitt.
I see you're reading. Is that a book?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is.
We have lots of books in Favre's house. They are very pretty too, filling the library from floor to ceiling. I take them down and look at the pictures sometimes. You must be awful smart, miss.
I shouldn't say so, Mr. Pitt. Even if it were true, which it's not. It's impolite to give oneself compliments. Don't you agree?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I'd agree with everything you say, because you're so smart. I may say that, mayn't I, since I'm not complimenting oneself.
Yourself.
Yourself?
No, yourself. When speaking of yourself, you must say myself, not yourself.
I see. I get confused sometimes.
I don't mean to trouble you, Mr. Pitt. I know your intentions are kind.
but you said I oughtn't compliment you.
That's right, you oughtn't. When I said myself, I imagine you saying it, so it refers to you.
Oh, of course, myself is me.
That's right.
But now I've completely forgotten what I was planning to say.
That might be for the best.
Let me see. There's the flowers and how pretty you are and how smart and... Oh! I remember what I wanted to say. That I want to marry you.
Excuse me?
Miss Spencer, will you marry me? You'd make me happier than when I won the three-legged race with Jack Crumpton. We've both got a goat!
Mr. Pitt, really, no.
Oh, really, yes. I can show you. I've still got the goat.
I don't think you understand.
Oh, I understand, all right. All about goats. How to milk them and feed them. Don't you like goats, Miss Spencer?
I find goats delightful, Mr. Pitt.
So do I.
But you see, I can't marry you.
Father said you'd say that. And when you did, I was to remind you that I am the eldest son of a wealthy landowner. That means I am going to inherit everything when Father dies, because of something called primogeniture.
I know what it means, Mr. Pitt.
Right now, because he's not dead.
Thank goodness for that.
Right, because he's not dead, he'll give us a house and farm and money when we wed.
I'm sure he would, Mr. Pitt, but we're not going to wed.
But why not, Miss Spencer, if you don't mind me asking? Don't you like me?
Of course I like you, Mr. Pitt. I always enjoy your company, and I confess, I rooted for you in the three-legged race at the county fair. And when you won, you made me laugh.
Yeah, it was funny, wasn't it?
It was. But I'm not ready to marry just yet.
I understand. Will you please keep me in mind if you do decide to marry?
I promise I'll never forget this conversation.
And to make sure you don't forget, I'd like you to take this little gift from me as a reminder.
Oh, Mr. Pitt, what a beautiful locket. I couldn't possibly take something so personal.
Please, it would make me very happy.
Well, open it and show it to me.
Here it is.
But Mr. Pitt, this isn't a picture of you at all. It's a picture of the goat.
That's right, miss. What did you expect? After all, you know what I look like. Why would you want a picture of me?
I'm not saying I do want a picture of you.
Exactly. That's why I gave you a picture of Geraldine. She's the goat.
I concluded as much.
Now please don't forget that I asked you to marry me.
I certainly will not.
And don't forget about the goat.
Be assured, Mr. Pitt. I shall never forget you or the goat. Good day, sir.
Same to you, miss.
Flowers. And what a cute little bird. You're a friendly little fellow, aren't you? You come right up to me.
Hi there.
What a rude man. Mr. Chesterton, what means this behaviour?
It means I have come to make you my bride.
How dare you, riding your horse like that? It's cruel to the poor beast and rude to me. Such uncivilised behaviour. That's no way to treat a lady, sir.
I don't hold much with ladies, miss. I am a man of bold action and few words. When I see something I like, I take it, and I like you.
That may be, Mr. Chesterton, but I don't like you.
You may not like me, miss, but I have little patience where women are concerned. As my wife, you'll come when called, and obey as you must. that the world womenfolk have been born into. A world where men rule, and lovers are subject.
Pretty words, indeed.
I wasn't raised to speak flowery phrases and dainty words of love.
And what do you think would make me accept an offer like that? Marriage to a brute, arrogant, conceited, and aggressive.
Now, don't get saucy, miss. You left out rich.
Your money means nothing to me.
Yes, but your father's a different story.
How dare you?
It's money that will make you accept. Money pure and simple. Money and property. My family's bloodline goes back to the conquest. We're none of these nouveau riche whose hands have been tainted by trade. And if you don't accept my proposal, your father will. So prepare yourself to be my bride.
Over my dead body, Mr. Chesterton?
That's as may be, miss. It matters little to me. One way or t'other, as long as you bear me an heir and write quickly too. After that, you may do as you please. You can be sure that I will. Good day, ma'am.
Good riddance, rather.
That night, Mary returns home to learn how her lover has fared with his request to her father. Although Mary looks on Walter through a lover's rose-colored glasses, Mr. Spencer by no means sees him with his daughter's eyes. He prefers to assist his vision with his own pair of silver-rimmed spectacles. And therein lies the rub. Because somehow or other, Mr. Spencer can never focus his eyes in such a way that Walter appears to his best advantage. The young lover might be very clever, and very pleasant, and sensible too, but nevertheless, he's not the man for his daughter. Walter has not, in Mr. Spencer's estimation, the wherewithal to scrape together that most needful commodity, money. Good evening, Mary.
Good evening, Father. I pray I'm not disturbing your reading.
Oh, not at all, my dear. Please, sit beside me.
I'd rather stand, if you don't mind. Just now.
Suit yourself.
I understand that you talked with Mr. Markham today.
That I did.
And may I ask the outcome of your conversation?
I have no secrets from you, my dear daughter. He asked for your hand in matrimony.
Yes, and?
And I told him that, though he seemed a fine man otherwise, he in no way suited my estimation of the kind of man I expect my daughter to marry, especially a daughter on whom I plan to present such a sizable dowry.
But, Father, I love him.
Be that as it may, I have far more years of experience in things like this than you do.
Time and experience matter as nothing in things of the heart.
Of the heart, perhaps not. But in things of day-to-day life, of practical matters like ensuring my child has a roof over her head and food to eat, it matters a great deal. That a dowry doesn't get squandered.
But Walter loves me too. And he's hardworking. He would never let me go hungry or unsheltered. Father!
I've made up my mind, Mary, so there's nothing more to be said. I'm unalterable in my decision.
And Mother, does she feel the same way?
She does. Tell me, has no one else come to see you on similar business?
Yes, of course. As you know, Archibald Pitt talked with me this afternoon.
His father's a very wealthy man, though Archibald, well, he isn't.
He's very sweet, Father. But surely you can see that we're not right for each other.
You told him so?
Yes. I declined. But he is such a gentle soul. I don't believe he really took it to heart. Or even completely understood me.
No, perhaps he's not entirely suitable as a companion. But what about Edmund Chesterton? He's also from a wealthy family. He's related to an archbishop on his mother's side, and an admiral and a lord on his father's.
Everything you say is true, Father. But Edmund Chesterton is an arrogant knave. I don't doubt that he's given to drinking and gaming, and I don't know what else.
He is a conceited little puppy, I'll grant you that. Well, if they won't do, you'll have to wait for another.
But what about Walter? Surely he's worthy of my attentions.
I've never heard a word against him, or hold that he has no faults, except the one. A small income.
Oh, Father.
I'm doing what I think is best for you, body and soul.
Perhaps, Father, but you've broken my heart.
And he still hasn't fixed the hole in that fence there quite much. What I came for is what I want to know. Oh. Come along, Jemima. Here, how did that get there? Damn bones.
Oh, where can he be? What's taking Walter so long? He asked me to meet him precisely at sunset, and the sun's almost gone. What's keeping him?
Oh, Mary, my dear. Are you all right?
As well as I can be. Wondering as I am, what will become of us?
It just took longer than I had planned to prepare everything.
And what exactly are you preparing?
That I'll tell you in due course. But you must trust me.
You know I do, Walter. With all my heart.
I know.
But now you must leave me.
Only for a short while. My man will take care of the farm while I'm gone. It's for the best, don't you know? I'll send word soon. I've got plans.
I understand. God be with you, my dear Walter.
And with you, my own Mary. Till I return.
Till you return. But when?
Soon, my love. I will return and bring success with me. Our scheme cannot fail.
Fare me well and fear nothing.
I'll fear nothing.
Alas, the maiden speaks in a tone that shows how vainly she endeavors to comply with the lover's last behest. One last embrace, and they part. About a week after this parting, Mary's mother, Dame Spencer, pays a visit to a cousin at some 2 or 3 miles distance. A most comfortable visit it is. The tea excellent, the cherry brandy supreme, and to crown it all, Mistress Spencer wins from her relative several coins in a card game known as All Fours. On the way from her visit, Dame Spencer beholds, at a short distance before her, a wayfaring female mendicant seated at the foot of a hedge. She instinctively institutes an inquiry after a penny in her huge pocket.
Good evening, Mother.
And to you. Yours looks like a hard road to travel.
Appearances can deceive us. Though truly my road will not suit everyone. I wander from town to town, selling my wares, making a living as I can. But no one got rich selling 10 pots and pans from door to door, milady, Of that I can assure you.
Well, it seems I've had a bit of luck myself, which I'm happy to share with you. Here's a pence to help you to some bread and beer.
I thank you for your kindness, milady, but please keep your money for them that ask it. I seek no charity, nor do I need any.
Well, well, a proud one you are, eh? If you kept a civiller tongue in your head, it might be none the worse, though.
I've little to be proud of, milady. I do not see myself as better than those around me, nor worse. I just take all as they come, high or low.
That may be, but you'll get no coin from me. King George's head has no need to go a-begging in these times.
Stay, stay!
Unhand me, woman. What do you think you're doing?
I would do a favor for you, miss, if I may. Would you have your fortune told?
Not I, in troth. I thank you, but I have no need. I want no better fortune than I have.
Yet I could tell you what you wish to know.
Leave me, I say.
Once more I shall speak what I can tell.
Just as pleases yourself, good woman, only it grows late, so the quicker you are, the better.
I'll hinder you not. Your daughter.
What have you to say of her?
I have little to say of her. She is a bright and bonny flower.
I could tell you that. So could the whole village, so.
Aye, but I can tell you what neither you nor all the wise heads of your village together can tell. Mary Spencer will be married.
Like enough. My lass may have a husband without the asking.
Begone then, since the fate of your own blood interests you so little.
Why, of all the impertinence.
As you will, milady. You follow your way, as I will mine. Good evening, and fair travels.
Autumn to winter turns. The leaves fall from the trees. The snow covers the ground. Mary hears regularly from Walter, who sends letters as he travels from town to town, seeking his fortune. Then, one afternoon, as she helped her mother at home, tragedy strikes.
Mrs. Spencer!
Now who can that be?
Open, please. It's Alice Henderson.
Oh no. I hope nothing's happened.
Open, please.
Let her in, Dora. Yes, ma'am.
Evening, m'lady.
Mrs. Henderson, ma'am.
I'm so sorry to bother you, especially being the bearer of bad news.
Bad news?
But I knew the young mistress would want to know as soon as possible.
What's the matter? What's happened?
Is all well with the family? Is somebody sick?
As I was saying...
Please sit down. Dora, bring Mrs. Henderson something to drink.
Surely, ma'am. Oh, I'm a little parched, I will admit. Here, ma'am. Thank you. I came over as soon as I heard.
And what exactly did you hear?
Something I wish I'd never heard, nor had to repeat. There's been an accident. At the lake. Walter Markham has drowned.
Please, no.
Oh, my goodness, what happened?
He was on his way home, and his boat... overturned. Johnny Trelawney, the miller's boy, saw it all.
Oh, my poor dear Mary, I'm so sorry.
I am as well, Mary. Everyone around here knew how much you cared for him. We even hoped you might marry him one day if only he came into a little money so you might have the family blessing.
Now, don't be impertinent, Mrs. Henderson.
That's not my intention, ma'am. It's just that the two of them made such a lovely couple that all of us naturally thought that, well, after love, there follows marriage.
Now look what you've done. She's fainted away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dora,
I never.
Get some smelling salts.
As my husband George is always saying,
Mary.
I can never
learn
to keep my big mouth
Mary,
shut.
Mary, please, wake up.
Who is saying the wrong thing at the wrong time?
The next few weeks prove a whirlwind of sorrow for Mary Spencer. The townsfolk search the lake day after day, looking for Walter's body, but it never turns up. Beyond a shirt and some other clothes, it seems he's disappeared without a trace. The justice declares him dead, based on the shirt which Mary herself had sewn for Walter before he left. Her world is at an end. A short time later, while walking on a moonlit night, Mrs. Spencer again encounters the mysterious gypsy on the road.
Good evening, milady.
And to you.
I'm sorry to hear of your daughter's sorrow, but I have news to tell you if you'll hear it.
Good news?
All news is good for some, bad for others. All I can offer is to tell the truth.
Well, what truth can you offer?
That Mary Spencer will be married.
Oh, you are a cruel one, to raise such a subject again, especially at a time of sorrow like this. But surely, in time, those who have previously sought her hand will seek her again.
Of that I cannot say. But I can tell you that a few women would ask for the husband she is doomed to have.
What?
I'm leaving you now. Here, take this locket and open it when you see me out of sight.
A gold locket? How came you by a locket this costly?
No matter. It will tell you the husband of your beautiful daughter.
Of all the...
Good night, milady.
And there she goes, following the dark path and disappearing around the bend into the woods beyond. Now, what can this mean? What's this? A man's face? But I can't really make it out in this light. There, hold it up in the moonlight. No, can't be. Why, this picture shows Walter Markham. But that poor boy's drowned. Oh, my child married to a dead man? My goodness, what will become of her?
As a way of dealing with the sorrow of her loss, Mary has taken to walking to the lake each night. So distraught is the young woman that her parents fear she might do harm to herself. Each night when she walks, then, the neighbors send Johnny Trelawney, the son of the village miller, to watch her and to ensure that no second tragedy follows the first. Later that night, after the gypsy's terrifying prediction, Johnny witnesses a mysterious occurrence.
There goes Mary, walking along the lake shore. I'll keep an eye on the poor woman. She's so sad, and I wouldn't want anything to happen to her. I'll just hide here so she can't see me.
Oh, Walter, Walter, how could this happen? I miss you so.
Mary. Mary. Is that you?
Walter. Walter. Can it be you?
What's that? Can it be? I so drowned.
I'll never leave you, my love.
I know you won't, my darling. But how can we be together now?
We'll always be together. Here, wear my ring, and you'll be mine for all eternity.
Hey, what's going on over there?
Will you wear this ring and wait for me?
You know I will. Forever.
But who's there? Walter? Can that be you?
Goodbye, Mary. I love you.
Goodbye, my love.
Hey, what's happening?
Where did he go? He just disappeared.
Father, why have we come? All this commotion, so many of our neighbors.
The best way to avoid a scandal is to face it head on, my dear.
Scandal? What scandal?
That she's right, Bartholomew. There's no scandal, just a sort of odd situation that set people a-talking.
Still, I do wish you would take that ring from your finger.
Never.
Besides, it's on there, tight as all get out.
It'll never come off in my lifetime. I don't like to say it about a girl as kindly as Mary, but I do believe she's cursed.
Heaven prevent it, but I fear that I agree. It's a dark world and a mysterious one, is all I've got to say.
Nonsense. Mary's not cursed.
She'll never wed, that's for certain.
I'll see. Who would wed a woman affianced to a dead man?
Don't be silly. Who's affianced?
If she's not Walter's fiancée, then why is she still wearing his ring?
She's not wearing his ring. Mary, put your hand in your pocket.
Never! I'm proud to be Walter's bride.
Bride to a dead man?
A dead man?
It's a tragedy, of course. The young man's drowning. But it won't affect Mary's prospects for a fine match. Will it, Edmund?
Truth be told, sir, Mary is a bonny lass, and I am afeard of no man.
There. See what I mean?
Of course, in this situation, we're not talking about a man, are we? I'm not exactly afraid, but I don't go out of my way to upset the devil, if I can avoid it.
That truly said, and very sensible too.
What? The devil? Bah!
Edmund, how could you?
Bah! I'll not let my daughter marry a man who's afraid of the dark.
Not of the dark, Mr. Spencer, but of the spirits that go about in the dark.
Aye, for certain.
I'm not afraid, Mary.
There. Do you hear that? Here's a man with a heart.
He might have a heart, but he's ever been a bit light in his head.
I'll stand by Mary through thick and thin.
I know you will, son.
Thank you, Archibald. Father, can we leave now?
And don't forget about my offer, Mary.
I promise you, Archibald, I'll never forget your kindness to me tonight.
Time passes until one evening, as Mrs. Spencer stands at the open door of the manor, she sees advancing towards her the identical gypsy who has prophesied such evil. Whatever she might be as a soothsayer, it seems she is an indifferent merchant, for the farmer's wife would have sworn that she carries the very same tin pans and kettles that traveled with her the last time they met.
Good evening to you, me lady.
The same to you, though. As to it being good, well, that's a matter of opinion.
Be quiet. I know all you would say, all that has happened.
My daughter, my poor daughter, but tell me, good mother, can the ill be cured?
It can. Give me some ale and a night's lodging, and the ghostly being seen with your daughter shall give her up to a mortal husband, aye, and a young and a gentle one.
Can that be true?
As true as the fact that water is wet and sunshine is warm.
Can you see Mary now?
That I can.
Mary, my dear, this woman has offered to help.
I need no help, Mother. I'm bound to wed as I want to wed.
That may be, me lady, but surely you'd rather have a husband of flesh and blood than of mist and spirit.
Don't even say it.
Don't worry, me lady. My actions will lead you to the happiness you desire, though the path to joy may not be as direct as some may wish. Now, let me see your ring.
Of course.
It's on so tight.
That's as it should be. I want to wed Walter, in sickness and in health.
Till death do you part?
No, Mother. Death shall not part us.
Let me see your palms, my dear. Yes, you have a good long lifeline and a very strong love line. Now close your eyes and think of your beloved.
Mary closes her eyes and concentrates, while the gypsy puts her fingers round the ring and slips it off the young woman's finger.
There.
Oh, thank goodness.
My ring!
Fear not, my lady. Tonight when you go to sleep, leave your ring, along with a jug of wine and a loaf of bread on the window by your fireplace. I'll be asleep right beside it to be sure all goes well. And you'll see, when you awake in the morning, you'll be facing a new day and a happy one.
When morning comes, the ring, the wine, and bread have disappeared. Neither the gypsy nor Mary Spencer is to be found. The house is searched. The village is searched. All work and occupation is suspended. The wise and the foolish alike wonder what has happened. Not a few villagers standing on the banks of the lake, pouring into the waters with some expectation of seeing Mr. and Mrs. Spencer in the shape of the ghost and the late Mary Spencer. The day passes, but neither ghost, gypsy, nor daughter come. Mary's parents, overcome by sorrow, remain in Spencer Manor. Sleep will not come to them, and midnight finds the disconsolate parents still sitting by the fireside, for they have no heart to go to bed.
What can anyone want here at this time?
Open the door, Bartholomew. There may be news of Mary.
Bartholomew opens the door and catches his daughter in his arms as she rushes inside.
Father.
Mary!
But beside Mary stands another figure.
What have we here? A blessing from heaven?
Who the devil is this?
No devil, sir. Though a ghost or son-in-law, it's up to you to decide.
Walter! Is that you? We all thought you were... dead.
Good evening, sir.
The miller's boy said you had drowned. Saw it with his own eyes.
Well, there's seeing and there's seeing. Ain't that a fact?
Not drowned after all, eh?
Oh, well, thank goodness. But we all thought...
Aye. And now I see you wanted us to believe...
I fear you have played us a bitter trick, you have, Mr. Markham.
I'm sorry for any pain I've caused.
It was the only way we could show you how committed we are to each other. How much in love.
Thou art bit of a devil. But better than a ghost, after all.
And now, you see, the couple is duly wed with the parents' blessing. And though Archibald is not to be the groom, he does remain a dear family friend and receives a prize goat as a sign of thanks from the loving couple.
You have been listening to The Ghost's Bride, written by Arnold Anthony Schmidt, and directed and mixed by Julia Warren. With J. Michael Baran as the Gypsy and Bartholomew Spencer, Jonathan Brandt as Walter Markham, Archibald Pitt, Edmund Chesterton, and Johnny Trelawney. Tony Deva was Mrs. Spencer, the house servant Dora, and the neighbor Mrs. Henderson. Pam Palsat played Mary. J. Michael Baran was the narrator. The Ghost's Bride is based on William Harrison Ainsworth's 1828 short story, The Late Bride, published in The Keepsake. James Costello is the general manager of KCBP-FM, which premiered this radio play.